another 2-2. Hit well out into deep right center and gone. They get that run right back. It's 5-3.
I'll make it 2 out of 4 for Rizzo.
Line cut by Zobrist. Cubs win. Cubs win. A chance for a 9-1 homestand and a sweep if they can take tomorrow. And it'll be Jake Arrieta on the mound.
They're decent.
Best team to ever play baseball, doing it again today, beating the Diamondbacks 5-3.
Best team to ever play baseball.
If I don't go with hyperbole on the Cubs right now, I really don't know what to do. It's just ridiculous.
You're actually kind of right going with that angle, because what else can you really say about the Cubs at this point?
I mean, they're being compared to the Big Red Machine. Might as well throw the 1927 Yankees in there. They're on pace for 117 wins. Let's talk to an expert. Former WGN voice. You've heard him all over the station for many years. He worked here, then he left, and then I took his job. And it's all coming full circle at this moment. Mike Farron, pre- and post-game for the Diamondbacks, who, of course, are in town one more game tomorrow, and also does great work with SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, joining us on 720 WGN. Farron, did I go too far there calling him the best team ever? I mean, from where you sit, what do you think?
It's funny. One of our regulars on our show on Sirius is Andy Green, the manager of the Padres, and he jokingly called them that free. They came in and took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. So I thought that was, listen, I don't know, I guess I'm supposed to call them the best team ever, but they're clearly the best team in baseball right now.
And that's the reality.
Well, moving forward, Mike, if we are going to try to pick this team apart and continue to talk them, not in hyperbole when McCarm's not doing that,
it's good to know that Andy Green and others are doing the same. But continue on. Sorry, Kevin.
Where could the Cubs add to this roster? Is it bullpen help? Is it an extra starting pitcher to have in their arsenal? Is it an outfielder? What do you think they need to add for the stretch?
Well, what do they need to add?
Right. Well, that's what I mean.
That's the thing. They probably don't need to. Where can they improve? I mean, I think you hit on the three spots. I mean, I think, you're starting to see, I don't want to necessarily see some warts, but you're starting to see some of the bullpen arms kind of come back to where you may have expected them to be. I know Clayton Richards struggled recently, and Cahill today didn't look like he wanted any part of Paul Goldschmidt in a really big spot in that game. So I think you could probably look at that and say, well, we can upgrade either getting the ball to Hector Rondon or, at the end of games and pushing Rondon back. I don't think you need to make a major move there. I mean, I think adding a, setup guy does that. I think from a starting pitching depth standpoint, if you were to add another starter, I don't think anybody – I mean, listen, what, all 5 starters have ERAs under 3 right now, right? Nobody's going out of the rotation. Right. So if you wanted to add somebody that, perhaps gave you some depth in case you were concerned about, Jason Hamill's hamstring or Kyle Hendricks in the second half, then I think that would be a route. Well, if you wanted to add somebody in left field, to play that position more regularly – to upgrade over the production that you've had from Jorge Soler when he's played. And I think that's a possibility too. But, the lineup is and the position players are pretty flexible. And I think that, certainly plays to Joe Maddon's strength. The bullpen's been pretty good, especially the A guys. And Adam Warren, I thought, was a great pickup this winter. I liked him better as a starter even than as a reliever. But I think he's pitched awfully well. And the rotation's been dynamite. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of like, you certainly, improve the roster somewhere, but I don't think that they need to go out and make any major splash. Now, that's to say that they will or they won't, but I just think that, what you're looking at is incremental improvements on the roster are all that they could do or need to do, and I don't even think they need to do that. It's a pretty good roster to begin with.
Mike Farron, pre and post for the Arizona Diamondbacks MLB Network with us here, 720 WGN. What do you, if you're the Cubs, Farron, what do you do with Jake Arrieta? Are you just letting this play out? Because that's what it seems like it's going to be. Or do you try to get him in a room and say, look, we're willing to do X, let's make this happen, and we'll buy you out, the rest of this year and next season and maybe 4 years after that?
Well, I mean, I think, it takes two to tango. So, I mean, How badly does Jake Arrieta want to put together a contract right now? He's a supremely confident guy, and that's part of the reason why he, is the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner. And he's a guy that's basically spent his entire life betting on himself. So, Now, he's not going to take less than market value to be able to stay. So, but I think it's pretty easy. I mean, it's, you know, let's use the Steven Strasburg contract as an example because it's the same agent, Scott Boras. You know, Strasburg got what I think there is a perception to some because he would have been the only starting pitcher on the free agent market really who, you know, had a strong track record this year. That means he's gotten a little bit of a discount, but you've got to remember that, you know, he far exceeded the previous high for a deal for a pitcher that had Tommy John surgery. Yeah, Arrieta hasn't had any major physical problems as a pro, and you know he's a little bit older, maybe than you know it feels like based on where his experience level is. But he's certainly a $30 million a year pitcher. So if you want to extend him for you know 7 and 210 or 7 and 230 or whatever it is, great. But does that make the most sense for the Cubs to do that, especially when they're in the midst of a 7-year contract with another starting pitcher who's going to be playing into his mid-30s? But I think that's a really dangerous game to play when you start giving out too much money to guys who are over the age of 30, and especially pitchers, because you know position players, when they get hurt, that you still tend to get some value back from them. When you have pitchers get hurt, they miss a significant amount of time. So I'm not talking about you know little things. I'm talking about you know having surgical injuries. So to me, you know, it's interesting, and you know where does Arrieta want to be, at least in terms of the finances. And you know, how much sense does it really make for the Cubs to try and sign anybody up long term at this point? You know, it's not like you're buying a guy who's 25 years old. You know, you're talking about a guy who's closer to 30.
Mike, on the south side, the White Sox struggles continue. They added James Shields today, giving up Eric Johnson and Fernando Tatis Jr. What are your thoughts on that trade on James Shields? And do you think the White Sox are true contenders moving forward?
Well, I mean, the White Sox are getting something like $30 million in this deal, yeah. Right? I mean, so you're talking about, what, 3 years and $26 million, basically, and for James Shields?
And he does have an opt-out, though, after
yeah,
this.
Yeah, well, okay, so well, here's two things. One, if he takes that opt-out, he's probably not going to get that same money in free agency unless he pitches, you know, the best baseball of his life right now, unless he decides that he wants to go back to Southern California. And I'd heard that he really wasn't interested in leaving San Diego, that he wasn't planning on taking the opt-out there, because he loved it. He's from Southern California. So maybe that's part of it. But, okay, let's say that you get Shields for the remainder of that. I mean, you're talking about, what, $8.5 million a year, basically, right, for a guy that's, if not anything else, been an incredibly durable starting pitcher. I mean, they need innings. This is a big upgrade to their rotation over what they've had out of the 4 and 5 slots, whether it be, you know, Matt Latos or Miguel Gonzalez. And you know, if you consider that they had basically a $13 million windfall when Adam LaRoche retired, plus whatever other money they may have had, you know, kind of on the books that they knew that they could use for upgrades at the trade deadline, it doesn't take them out of making the play for something else to help the offense. And I think that's what's really interesting about this deal, is that the Padres are eating more than half the money to jettison James Shields. The White Sox didn't give up really anything that's going to impact them in the short term. You know, maybe Eric Johnson, you know, finds some level of consistency and becomes an okay major league starter, but I don't think his ceiling is even as high as James Shields. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is what, you know, 5, maybe 6 years away from the big leagues? I mean, he just signed at 16, so at best. So to me, this was a great move for the White Sox. And it helps not only looking at a rotation that's, you know, under control, that Sale, Shields, Quintana, Rodon. I mean, that's a really formidable top four, not just for this year, but for the next couple, if in fact Shields doesn't opt out.
Mike Farron, pre and post game for the Arizona Diamondbacks, MLB Network Radio. Okay, so it seems like there's a significant push to move the strike zone to the top of the knee. That still has to be decided, but it looks like it's going to happen. Baseball wants more action, Mike Farron. Now, they also want quicker games. So I don't know how that all boils together, but what's your take on moving the strike zone up?
Well, you know, I think Jason Stark at ESPN wrote a really good look at this week. And, you know, listen, the first time that the bottom of the strike zone ever changed was in 1996, and they moved it to the hollow of the knee. And in Jason's explanation, it was more to get umpires to recognize the low strike. The strike zone is as low as it's ever been. It's being called lower than it ever has been before. And I think part of it is a decline in offense, but it leads to a decline in offense. But the other part of it is the decline of balls being put in play. So, you know, will walks go up? Potentially. Will offense go up? Potentially. Will ball be put in play more? Well, that's certainly what they're guessing. I think it was something like, you know, 5,000 fewer balls put in play or something like that over the course of this season as there was in, say, 1995. You know, I don't think it's about time of game. I don't think it's – I think that that's – you know, Rob Manfred's been really clear about that, that it's – we're not talking about time of game. We're talking about the pace of the action. People are willing to sit and watch 3.5 hours of football on Sunday because they perceive that there's a lot of action. People are willing to watch baseball games for 3 hours. But the question is how you get young people to buy into watching baseball. Is it to make the game go faster, to be done sooner, or is it to make there more action within the game? And to me, I think he's right on with that. I mean, if you can find ways to get the ball and play more, whether it results in more run scoring or not, it just has a better flow to it, a better pace. I mean, there's something like 30% of all plate appearances right now are ending in either a walk or a strikeout. That's the highest level in baseball history. So get the ball in play and make it work.
Tigers just beat the White Sox 7-4 as Hawk Harrelson calling this the road trip from hell as it continues with yet another loss today.
And they won a series in New York on it too.
That is true. That's true. Before you go, Mike, I'm just curious your opinion because you talk to so many people. How much do you think the manager is worth? Like, to me, the Cubs would be great without Joe Maddon, but I don't think they get to where they got last year without Joe Maddon. He was super aggressive and with Addison Russell moving to short and benching Castro and handling everything that comes with being a Cub. Like, I think the guy deserves a ton of credit. And maybe there are only a few managers in the game that do, but if you do have an elite one like La Russa was for the Cardinals back in the day, I mean, I think it makes a huge difference. Where do you come out?
Yeah, I think you make a really good point on that, Mark. I mean, I think it's the guys that are at the really high end do have a greater impact than where most managers fall, you know. And I think those guys are so few and far between, though. I mean, you might only have two or three of them. It's almost, you know, it's almost like the curve on position players, right? You know, so like you take first baseman, and there might be two or three guys that are total difference makers, and then there's a group that are pretty good. And there's a group that are pretty average. And then there's some guys that are below average, and then there are two or three that are just not very good at all. And I think that's the case with big league managers, too. I think it's probably the case with big league general managers. I think it's probably the case with radio program directors. I think it's probably the case with people who run accounting firms. You know, there are always going to be people that are better at their job. And I think Joe Maddon's one of the best at it. And I think that you're right. I mean, they probably do not get to this point this quickly. They still would be a good team, but he's helped to create a culture there to buy into. And I think that, you know, it's important to find either one of two things: players that fit the style of your manager, or for a manager to be adaptable to the style of the personnel that he has. And I think those are the things that are really unique. And I think the people that adapt to the style of the personnel that they have are really the best managers. I mean, I think they're the best in just basically any kind of coaching, is that if you are able to change what you want to teach or what you want to do based on the personnel to get the most out of them, you're probably going to have the best success.
Mike, what's up with the Diamondbacks? They got the new uniforms. They got their new top base. 10 games under 500 right now.
There was a poll on Sports Talk Live that which is the ugliest uniform in baseball, and the D-backs go number one. I actually like the uni. I think it's got a tough little flavor to it.
Yeah, I would assume that was a lot of 50- and 60-year-olds voting in that, because it seems like the 12-year-olds really dig it. But, you know, listen, it's a young team. It's a team that has I think been inconsistent, really, in a lot of its performance, and I think some of it is tied to youth. It's been more of a struggle than I thought it was going to be coming into the year. I thought this is going to be a pretty good team, and you know, what, 10 games under 500 now. I'm a little bit surprised. You know, Greinke's really been pretty good since the first week of the season. He was dynamite his last time out. You know, Archie Bradley, you guys saw yesterday. Boy, the last two starts he's had, he looks like he's turning a corner. We get a good report on Shelby Miller today in his extended spring game. That's been a real, real problem for him this season in finding any level of consistency. But, you know, it's young starters. You got some young position players that are getting their feet wet. And, you know, I think it's, you know, everybody. I mean, Mark, you dealt with this when you were in Kansas City, right? I mean, I feel like we had this conversation 5-6 years ago about the Royals, right? When the Hosmer-Moustakas group was coming up, some guys take longer to get it at the big league level than others. And you know, we're still talking about a group of players that have like 700, 800 plate appearances in the big leagues. They're not even close to kind of being finished products. So to me, I think that's the biggest thing. The middle of the lineup with, you know, Paul Goldschmidt swinging the bat better now is certainly more formidable. You guys have seen Jake Lamb the last couple of days. He's been dynamite. Should get David Peralta back on Monday. I think there's some hope that maybe by August, A.J. Pollock is back in the lineup. But, you know, it's been a disappointment to this point for sure. But I think it is a talented group, and it is a young group. He's still, I believe, the youngest roster in baseball. It's amazing. The oldest regular is Wellington Castillo at 29, and the oldest starter is Zach Greinke at 32. The next oldest is Patrick Corbin, and he's 27. So it's still a really young group.
Yep. On their way, those Royals teams that you mentioned, they had some 70-win season, but you could just see that it was on the way. They're not going to be winning 75 for very much longer. Mike Farron, former WGN, going on to great things, doing great work with the Diamondbacks and MLB Network. We appreciate you jumping on, Sir Farron.
Hey, anytime, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
all right,
Mike.
All right, Mike Farron with us here on 720 WGN.